Hello, folks. This is the Hens and Boys Comics Hour, your weekly discussion of comics and other pop culture.
Is that really how we're doing this now?
Your home for news, reviews, slightly antagonistic banter, and much, much more. I am Robbie Dorman.
And I'm Eric Z. Goodnight.
And we are in the same room. Mm-hmm. I'm looking right into Eric's eyes and...
The magnetic
attraction. It's a good thing you folks aren't here. Because it'd be dangerous.
The tension in this room.
So much of it.
So tense.
Okay.
My God.
This is episode 3, and we just keep on going.
Yeah, we do.
We are not stopping for nobody.
You can't stop this handsome train.
Please excuse my double negative.
I'll permit it.
Oh, I appreciate that. Yeah. This is gonna be jam-packed episode. So we're just going to dive right into checking in. I'm going to let Eric go first because he's so beautiful.
Oh, yeah. That's how we do things. I have been watching too much Netflix.
That's, is there a too much?
Yes, there is. And I'm well into that territory. I have crossed that threshold. But we've talked about this a little bit, that the Cartoon Network's got this push to get some of their shows onto Netflix. We have Samurai Jack, which I watched all of season one, and it apparently takes like 33 minutes to watch all of Adventure Time.
They're not substantial episodes.
They're not very long, no. But I don't need to watch all of Adventure Time again because I've watched every episode 11 times. I mean, I've seen everyone so many times. It's kind of disgusting.
I can go on a refresher course.
Yeah, but that's on there, and Venture Brothers is on Netflix. Just season one of all of these.
Yeah, I don't know why. Wish they had more than one season, especially Venture Brothers and Adventure Time. Those are the ones I'd like to... I already own most of the Venture Brothers seasons that have been released, but Adventure Time, they haven't released them yet.
I guess that's true.
They only have the first season available, at least on physical disc.
You can buy 11 DVD collections of Jake versus Meemaw, though.
I could, with a little hat.
Is it a fin hat?
I don't have his hair, so it doesn't work as well. Which is, and also this is what kind of bothers me. The season one box, it spoils his reveal. Like,
oh yeah, it shows the hair.
So
when you take the box off,
yeah, okay, because it's a slipcase of his hat, basically. Well, I thought that was.
It also took him like what 3 years?
Yeah,
to release the box. If you don't know by now, you don't care.
That's true, but people picking up the first time, I think that would upset me because that's a big reveal. Like it's like a, I felt like wow, that was like hilarious. I thought that
didn't
was
they
big...
didn't they reveal it in season one though, or was it season two?
It's season one.
Was it somewhere? Season one? It was the episode with the witch.
Yeah, it was with the witch.
The one with the twig nose.
Yes,
so we know our Adventure Time.
This is next week, all Adventure Time podcast.
Yeah, it's an adventure. It'll be an adventure.
I'm sure there's several that are already much better than what we could possibly produce.
It'd be an Adventure Time podcast. I mean, who's going to do it? Just Pendleton Ward, and that's...
That's true. There's not a lot of people you could actually like reference.
What the hell else was we going to talk about? Oh, yeah, Arrested Development is...
back on, yeah.
Everything's on Netflix.
It is. I think
I'm just gonna board up my house.
You don't need to go
with,
outside
with you in it.
I need to leave like at a certain time so we can. I can't go by that.
You're not just gonna.
Kim would be very upset with me if
who's
I.
Kim?
We've already discussed this. This is a running gag where I just. Is it like? Have you ever you watch Vlog Brothers?
The what?
Vlog Brothers. Vlog Brothers.
Oh,
Nerd
no.
Brotherhood 2.0. Nerd Fighters.
I know of it.
Okay. Well, they have a thing where it doesn't matter. They always ask one of the brothers to define the other brother, and it's always some silly answer. I don't want to rehash their gag, though, because they do it pretty well.
Stealing gags.
We already stolen several, so...
I think it's probably for the best.
That we don't steal more? Are you just winking at me?
Not intentionally.
Okay.
I can't not do it.
But I think the funniest tweet I saw about the Arrested Development thing was like... Well, as of midnight tonight, Arrested Development is canceled again.
That's what happens. They all come out at once.
Everyone, I think they actually asked the guy wrote them all. He's like, don't binge watch them. Space them out a little bit. But that's what everyone's doing. Just going to watch them all back to back. And there you go. No more Arrested Development again.
I was just talking with a friend about this. You can't put that shit on the schedule. People don't want that
anymore. I know. I understand.
People only binge watch stuff now.
It's true.
That's the habit. It's what we've become accustomed to.
It's very true.
What are you checking in with?
I am checking in with an excellent film. Based on a comic book character, so it's right on topic.
Absolutely.
A film from 1986, so it's almost as old as I am.
I can feel my soul throwing up.
Called Howard the Duck.
Yeah.
I saw it in its entirety for the first time last night. I'd seen bits and pieces before. It's awful. You should probably see it once just to see how terrible it is and the ridiculous levels of duck puns. And egg puns can be reached in, and it's almost 2 hours long. I don't know how it could be that long, but it is almost 2 hours long. It's
seriously spun out of control.
It's set in Cleveland, by the way.
Cleveland.
That's how Howard pronounces it.
Ah.
He's like, what kind of name for a place is Cleveland? But Howard the Duck is in it. They have a little suit. With a midget in it, or a little person. I should be politically correct.
That's what I was going to say.
A little person's in it. Multiple little people, I believe.
What other hurtful words can Robbie say?
I know. But Leah Thompson's in it, and Tim Robbins, and the principal from Ferris Bueller. His name's Jeffrey Jones. He's also been arrested for child pornography, which is constantly... We constantly reference that when we were watching the film. I'm not going to go in depth, because it really doesn't deserve it. I'm just going to talk about one scene. The thing that has stuck with me and will stick with me. So Howard he's in his duck universe, and he gets pulled to Earth because of some giant laser beam on Earth.
Of course.
Of course. And he lands outside of this punk rock club where they're not playing any kinds of punk rock music. Leah Thompson is the lead singer of a band that does not play punk rock music, even though everyone is dressed like punk rock people.
What year did you say the movie was made?
86. Sounds like
that explains a lot.
It sounds like new wave, like pop,
yeah,
the kind of stuff that actually they were playing. But anyway, he's outside the club. He helps her get out of a fight, and then she takes him home because that's as you do when you meet an anthropomorphic duck on the street and have known him for 10 minutes. You say, "Well, you can come to my house. You can crash there. Don't worry about it."
I think more. You probably just scream and run away.
That's what happens a lot in the movie.
Yeah.
There are a few people, like, there's only one time do they think that maybe it's a child in a costume. Like, that would be my first guess. If I came across the...
Or a little person.
Or a little person in a costume, but that's less likely. There's more children in the world than there are little people.
It's true, but I mean, it depends on how articulate the person is.
That's true as well. But anyway, she takes him home, and he's had a rough day, Howard has, so he falls asleep, and she goes through his wallet. And there's a Master Quack card, his ID, some pictures of his family, which are very endearing. But then she goes through, sees some dollars, she goes, opens up the billfold, and there's some dollar bills with George Washington's face with a duck bill on it, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's an opened condom inside. And then, in her words exactly are, "Oh, Howard, what am I gonna do with you?"
Someone that she's known for like 10 minutes.
She's known for maybe an hour. It's a duck that talks. She's known for an hour. She finds an open condom in his wallet while he's sleeping and just goes, "Oh, Howard."
Like a condom or the wrapper?
A condom. Like, without a wrapper. Just the condom. And if I open any wallet, human or duck,
yeah,
my first reaction is, "What the fuck? get out of my hands.
Yeah.
Well,
here's the thing. How recognizable would a duck penis condom be?
It looks like a human condom, so...
Well, yeah, that's what I'm saying. I'm saying this is a factual... factual inaccuracy in Howard the Duck.
But she knows... She knows it's a condom. She just goes, "Oh, Howard." Not what the
not you, gross.
Not horror. Yeah, that's disgusting. I don't. And that's the thing I'm probably going to take away from that movie.
That's strong. That's good.
Yeah, that's
good screenwriting.
That's what I'm going to remember. And they almost had sex,
like you do,
with a duck.
Yeah,
Leah Thompson in panties. I was having sex with Howard the Duck. Very disturbing.
It sounds good.
He gets a feather erection on the top of his head.
I don't think that's how ducks work.
I don't think it is either, but
that's maybe how it Howard, is. I'm
that's
not,
how Howard works.
I am not David Attenborough. Attenborough? I don't know.
Okay. So that's it for checking in this week. Next news brief, and we do mean brief, because we got a lot of stuff to bring you this week.
They can't hear you, the face you're making at me.
That's too bad. We're just going to discuss one thing very quickly. Archie Comics is going to have its first gay kiss. Surprisingly, after its first gay wedding. It's already had a gay wedding. It's going to actually have a gay kiss.
They're really keeping it chaste for Jesus or whatever in the hell Archie does.
I don't know who buys Archie Comics.
I don't know. The jokes are all written by incredibly old men. It's always someone in their 80s that's like, oh, you know what's funny? Teenagers. God, they're so incredibly lame. They're so incredibly lame. I hate Archie Comics.
Eric hates, I
have said it.
He hates them. It's not even dislike. It's strong, intense hatred.
I would burn them. All probably.
Oh, okay. There, Bradbury.
Ray Bradbury loved burning books.
He wrote about it.
He just loved burning.
He loved writing about it.
I guess
it's a good topic, really, for fiction.
I think so.
But I say bully for Archie Comics for being more inclusive.
No, I definitely don't have. I applaud them for that. I just
hate them in general.
I read a lot of Archie Comics as a kid.
I think it's changed somewhat.
Maybe. It doesn't look like it has.
More metatextual, more self-referential.
I pick it up every so often and look at it, and it just gives me the uncomfortables.
I don't know what else. We
there's not a whole lot
There's
else to
not
say.
A lot to say about it. It's good. We're saying yay. Yay for Archie and gay kissing.
I'm going to not make eye contact.
You don't have to feel ashamed.
I didn't know that was the emotion I was having.
I'll touch lightly on this as well. Comics Alliance has this past week had a couple posts about their maybe resurrection, which I hope they come back because I really like them. I think they were my favorite. They were my favorite comic site, and unfortunately they had to shut down because of some reason. AOL didn't like them. I don't know, but they've posted a couple hints that maybe they're still a heartbeat there. So hopefully they'll be back shortly.
We shall see. We shall see.
I just winked at Eric.
He did.
We don't get this when we're doing it separately. Yeah. We can't have facial expressions that no one can hear.
We use Skype and I turn off the video. I can't stand it.
I know, because I'm so attractive. Gets you distracted.
Because you're always twirling your mustache.
I know. It's looking pretty good now.
I think you're doing it, Bert. You're doing it right. I should point out for people that are listening that a sentence you literally said to me one time was, "I wonder if Target sells mustache wax."
And for those who are curious, they do sell hair styling wax, but it's not really for mustaches.
It's not.
I've used it. It's okay. I would say you need a stronger wax.
Yeah.
It needs to be strong because mustache hairs don't.
It needs to be more mustachey.
Yeah. I'm not sure how of those demographics lie over because I don't know, people listening to this actually have mustaches. One probably does at least. Odds are.
If it's comic fans.
It's a chance.
I mean, where's the neckbeard wax?
I'm not sure that's a good idea.
Are you sure?
I'm positive.
You're not going to give me props for coming up with neckbeard wax that quick?
No, that's, I mean, it's a natural, it makes sense.
Yeah.
I don't think it's a good idea.
I'm pretty proud of it. I'm going into business.
Okay, well, I wish you all the luck in the world.
That's fine.
You can be our first sponsor.
Good.
Eric Z, good night, neck beard wax.
I don't want to be known for neck beard. I need to shave, like, you don't even have a clue. It's terrible.
You just need to edge it.
You'll be fine. I do.
All right. Moving on into Weekly Flappers!
I thought we weren't making noises anymore.
Who said that?
This Kim person you keep talking about. No,
she doesn't mind those noises. She doesn't like the noises.
Okay, so
don't cough.
Don't do what you just did.
Don't do that.
You can keep doing the last thing that you did.
Exactly.
But the second to last thing.
Don't do that.
Yeah, okay.
So we're going to start off with Subatomic Party Girls number one. We're gonna pull up our little viewing boxes.
You get to listen to all the clicks of these damned iPads.
It's not so bad. It could be all the typing on the keyboard, which isn't so bad.
We're showing our brush strokes a little too much here.
It's written by Chris Sims and Chad Bowers, and the art and colors by Erica Henderson. I got turned on to this by... I'm a fan of Chris Sims. He's a writer. He wrote for Comics Alliance, writes a lot of stuff online. I listen to his podcast. And I thought I'd give he writes a couple books. I thought I'd give it a chance.
What can you tell me about him?
He loves Batman.
Mm-hmm. He's written Batman, or he just talks about Batman?
No, he talks about Batman
pretty much. Constantly.
Yeah, which isn't... Okay. He's knowledgeable. He's read a lot of comics. He's a pretty smart writer. He's funny. Loves wrestling, which is another thing. I love wrestling too. So it's he's a writer. He loves comic books.
So basically,
wrestling.
He's like your big brother.
Yeah, I don't. He's slightly older than me, so yeah, it works like that, I guess. But I enjoyed it. It's a nice little intro. It doesn't go into too much depth about the band or their adventures. Basically, basic plot summary is there's this female trio rock band. They're gonna, as a publicity stunt, get sent to the moon. Instead, they get sent to a different dimension or something, out in outer space. It's like Voyager it's kind of like Voyager, but with like a pop band. And I thought it was a little cute, funny.
I didn't enjoy it. And I think that I'm not sure really quite why. Like, everything in here, if you take all the elements, like, on paper, I should like this.
Yeah, that's why I was surprised when you said you didn't like it.
Rock and roll silly women characters and outer space.
One of them has a keytar.
See, that was part of what bothered me. It, like, a lot of it feels kind of forced or like heavy-handed, and I think girl on keytar kind of bugs me. I don't know.
Really?
I have weird emotions about this one. I think that it could be pretty good. I just feel like this is kind of a weak issue, and something about the way that it's written feels hammy and
forced. Well, I think it's purposefully hammy.
Yeah, I know. I'm just not digging it.
Which I like. It doesn't bother me. I like hammy.
I mean, maybe it's like written as like a genre, or like young adult. I can't talk. But
it's okay.
Written
not
like young adult fiction, like it's speaking to, you know, trying to speak to that demographic or something. Like, I don't think that it's bad, but I don't have wonderful feelings about it.
Well, I mean, I don't...
I love the art.
Okay, I was going to ask you about it.
No, I do very much enjoy the art, and I'm familiar with her. She did Marceline and the Scream Queens?
Yes.
Which I probably have a book or two with her art. It looked super familiar. Actually, I might even follow her on the old internet machine, because her name is super familiar. And she did all the art, which is a feat. She probably draws the stuff really quickly, which she's really nailing these figures, you know? But God, like, this part where, like, the manager is like, email him back. It's like, old person. it's called texting. It's like, oh my God, that's the worst thing I've ever heard.
Okay, I enjoyed it for what it was. It's an origin. Yeah. I mean, it's the first issue. It's not going to.
I would.
That's not too much. It's a dollar.
Yeah,
I mean, that's. I guess
it was worth
a strong solid.
I would say that I have my problems with it, but I would also say that I would probably give it to issue two.
Yeah,
for making a judgment on it.
I thought it was cute and fun.
Yeah,
it's not, you know, anything. It's not supposed to be serious or deep or anything.
Yeah,
it's a buck. I'd say if the idea sounds interesting, you give it a shot. And if you don't like it, you're at $1. It's not so bad.
Yeah.
But next, we're doing Batman Inc. number 11.
Yes. Written, can I make that noise?
You can make that noise. That noise is that's a good noise.
That is a good noise.
It's written by Chris Burnham, and the art is by Jorge Lucas.
That could also be George. I know
it might be George. George or Jorge. Usually with a J, it's the whole. But you never know.
I swear to God, I've seen it both ways.
Okay. Either way, you understand that we might be pronouncing his name incorrectly.
And we have pronounced probably lots of things incorrectly.
I saw Batman Inc. being released this week, so I was like, well, release Batman Inc. Morrison's good. And I did not realize Morrison wasn't writing this issue. That Chris Burnham, who normally is the artist for Morrison, is the writer. And he wrote this one. And it covers the Batman of Japan. What did you think about this, Eric?
Rage.
You felt rage.
I felt rage about this book. This is complete nonsense. this is.
It's insane.
Yeah, I'm all for insane comics for sure, but this does not work.
You don't like it?
No, I do not. I feel like the parody aspect would work a lot better. This art is too Western, I think, to pull this off. I think I might accept the ridiculousness and the parody.
If it looked like a Japanese manga style?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I don't know. Like, I actually, when it started, I was like, okay, this is really weird and interesting, and there's these silly Sentai people, and they're murdering people for no reason. And then there's a girl with angel wings, and
it's, Canary.
Yeah. I think that, like, she was an existing character before this book.
Yeah.
Okay. Shows what I
think.
Know.
I think so. Again, I'm not positive, but the way they talk about her, I'm certain.
It's every character's been around for 1,000 years. It's kind of ridiculous.
These mutated face people aren't. They're new.
Whoa! Spoilers, man. They are new.
I don't give a shit if people. No one reading this book is going to go.
I don't know that they should read this book.
Yeah, I wouldn't say that I didn't like it. Like I wouldn't buy it again.
No. I
do like that there's Lady Tiger Fists.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
I like
that. Tiger heads on her hands.
And that she can't, what do they say? You can't type because you have tiger hands.
Whoa, there's a Homestar Runner reference in here?
I think that's what they said at one point. Oh, you can't use a computer, can you? Because you can't type with your cat hands. Ever hear of speech recognition? It's right here. That page in the bottom.
I'm on that page. Yeah, that feels like a masked Homestar Runner reference.
Well, I mean, it's a quick. Look at her. She has tiger hands. Mm-hmm. How does she do?
Like boxing glove hands.
It's almost like boxing.
It's close. It's close. Very close.
Boxing glove hands don't have jaws.
I guess.
They don't have teeth.
No teeth.
But again, I wouldn't recommend neither of us, I don't think, would recommend this for.
No, I would not recommend it to.
It's not bad by any stretch, but it's not worth the cover price.
No, it's not. I would actually. I don't know. It is kind of bad in my.
Okay,
opinion.
It's bad. Okay, Eric thinks it's bad. I'm kind of meh.
Yeah, I think that's. I'll be Mr. Negative on this.
That's
one.
Fine. We need Mr. Negative.
That's true.
Someone has to bring truth.
Mr. Negative.
Bring truth to words. Next up is All-Star Western number 20, featuring Jonah Hex and Booster Gold.
Yeah, what the fuck?
He's time traveling. That's his gimmick now.
I guess so. He is from the future. This cover I really enjoy.
Yeah.
I don't know why I always like it when people draw guns that are way too big.
But yeah, Booster Gold, his gimmick right now is he's traveling through different times and stuff. He doesn't remember much about himself, and he's learning. There's rumor that he's going to get his own solo book soon.
Yeah.
But I liked this.
I had a good time.
It was fun. It was a fun adventure. Kind of grisly some points.
Hex is another one of those sort of. I don't want to say on the fringe or on the periphery.
Yeah.
I don't want to say that, but he's one of those characters like John Constantine that, you know, they're out of the limelight, but they're like really interesting looking characters.
He's been reappropriated yeah. by the proper DC universe.
Yeah.
And now you see kind of his they kind of put him in the continuity kind of in the old West, and they make mention of like references to modern, like ancestors of modern DC characters and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. Booster Gold's in this book. I think I'm okay with that. It's funny. It's enjoyable.
I like it for this. Out of water. I like it for this story.
I don't think it's going to be. I don't think he's
not. Yeah, I hope they never do it again.
I don't think. I believe this is going
to
be the end.
I don't want Superman to fly around and make the Earth go backwards in the Superman movie.
I think that
after and go he's, back and hang out with Jonah Hex.
It's kind of how it's where Booster Gold's been jumping around. So I think after this arc's over, he's going to go back to... He might get his own book, or he'll be in someone else's book for an arc and then travel around again. What do you think about the art? You like the art?
I do. It's...
I really like that image with all the skulls.
Where is it
in the very beginning.
In the beginning? In
the church.
Oh yeah, no. There's some gorgeous drawing in here. Something about the way some of the faces are handled, like it kind of bothers me. But like that one, like where the part with the couple and she's drawn really terribly in a couple of panels. But the one at the top, I think she's drawn amazingly well. Like, have you seen a head before? That's not what they do. I don't know. It's easy to pick on people for this stuff. But there's some really gorgeous stuff on there. I think that
the opening splash page, I'm a big fan of, just because
skulls
are like, you blow them up, they look pretty good.
There's a lot of things I can be an asshole and pick on, but really I think that it's overwhelmingly good. The colors work really well. It tells the story really well. It feels pretty good. This is a good solid book, even with the gimmick of Booster Gold in the West. It still feels pretty all right. I don't feel cheated.
Read
this one.
It's fun. I should give credit. It's written by Justin Gray and Jimmy Palmiotti. Mm-hmm. Art by Staz Johnson and Moritat.
He's been doing Palmiotti's been doing Hex for a while, hasn't he?
Well, yeah, DC's kind of been jumping around too to pick up. He's picked up a few books where they needed someone in a pinch, and he's been doing that too. But yeah, we enjoyed that. Next up is our selection from Marvel. We're doing a bonus.
Ooh.
We got a bonus book this week, so we're doing three from Marvel because I read this book. I read it.
Spoiler, he reads a lot of comics.
I read a lot of comics. I read this addition to our assignments for the week.
And we're starting
I thought with, we should have, we'll start with Young Avengers.
Are you gonna talk about
Young Avengers number 5? It's the ending issue of the initial story arc with the relaunch title. The little recap page at the beginning is pretty excellent to take off on Tumblr.
I think that whenever there's not a recap page,
Marvel does recap pages. DC does not do recap pages.
And that bothers me.
DC, it's strictly a cost-cutting measure.
Yeah.
It's one less page that they have to write and pay for include.
That's heartbreaking.
Yeah, I enjoy recap pages because even in books I'm reading, sometimes I don't have to go back and read 4 or 5 issues to remember what's happening.
Well, I think even just as simple as introducing all the characters in the story.
Yeah.
Like, Scott Pilgrim did that at the start of every book, and, you know, why would you even need to do that? But it's pretty necessary. Yeah, well, it's not necessary, because it just said it wasn't necessary, but I don't know, it just feels good.
Yeah, it's nice. You get a nice little idea, oh yeah, that character. You get good delineation between them all, and you see just the important stuff that reminds you, oh yeah, it can be used as foreshadowing as well, because an author can, you know, point out, yeah, this is important, remember, mm-hmm. and then show you where this stuff comes from. But yeah, I follow Kieran Gillen on Tumblr. His Tumblr's pretty good, so.
Who is this?
He's the writer.
Kieran Gillen.
Yeah. This is written by Kieran Gillen. I'm a big fan. Jamie McKelvey does the Mike Norton. Jamie McKelvey did most of the art. I think he did the actual pencils, and then Norton did the coloring. Damien Kelby is a good artist, at least in my estimation.
I enjoyed this, yeah.
Yeah, this is a good...
I enjoyed this on that level.
Yeah, this is a good book. I mean, that's... I
really dig it, and I'm... you had emailed me and say, hey, let's not review this one. I'm like, yeah, I don't want to review it. It's, I like it.
Okay.
I don't want to just be like, you know, fuck everything. All this is stupid. This guy's an idiot. I want to talk about stuff that's good, too. You know what this reminds me of a lot? And this is sort of a no-duh moment, but Runaways.
Yeah.
It really seems like they're like, okay, Runaways worked really well. Let's do a new one because, you know, aren't those kids like 50 years old now?
Kieran Gillen, like, he purposely wanted a book that was... appealed to teenagers and was in that kind of mindset where it's set with young superheroes who are not established and that they're working their way up and trying to deal with issues as actual young people deal with, not typical, you know, old superhero stuff that, you know, we typically see.
I think that maybe it's just because it's on an emotional level or whatever it is. I'm not exactly sure what it is, but I really react well to that kind of story. Like when I think about Carolina in Runaways and like how she struggled with being a lesbian. Like that's a really like heartbreaking story.
Yeah.
You know? Like that was one of the most beautiful things in that book to me. But like the two gay characters in this, it kind of feels like they're trying to recreate that to me.
Well, these guys have been, since the original, the last Young Avengers title established that.
So I was going to say, because they're really brushing over it, so it's clearly been established.
Yeah, even then, it's still gay couples are
not
very prevalent, especially male gay, either.
Lesbian, no, male gay is like super...
There's only two that I can think of off the top of my head, so...
But it feels like it was put in here. Well, it was done intentionally.
Well, yeah, definitely. I mean, it's clear it is very spiritual successor, too.
Yeah.
Yeah, the
100%.
And 100%. And the original. And I love the ending credits. They even did, like, a kind of ending credits segment where he actually talked about, they kind of trail out almost.
Yeah.
And for the first arc.
But I would say I'm pretty interested in all of these characters. This is another book I would I'd pick up. I wouldn't follow it monthly because that's just kind of how I roll. But I would definitely pick up some collections of this. Like it.
Well, that's the first arc. They'll probably really sit in.
Yeah.
God knows when, because Marvel's trade policy is pretty awful, but usually takes forever for Marvel to release trades. I'm still waiting on the last Uncanny X-Force trade, Marvel, if you're listening. It's been out for, like, the series isn't over, and still nothing.
Can you not get it at a discount digitally?
It's not... I don't think
it's... not available as a collection?
I don't think so.
Okay.
I want it digitally. I want it paper. I like buying trades in paper.
Yeah, I agree. As you can see.
We're in Eric's little library, and there's a wall of books.
Yeah.
And substantial
portion. A lot of
substantial portion is comic books.
Quite a few of them are comics.
Next is Daredevil number 26, written by Mark Waid, art by Chris Samnee. This is kind of a no-duh book for people who regularly follow Marvel comics in general, because it's pretty much... I mean, it won the Eisner last year. It's every week. It's still good.
Need to start reading this. It's strong.
It's really good. I mean, it's continuing on. The same story that's been building from the very beginning of the series, where they've kind of touched on things here and there, and now it's kind of culminating. Daredevil's fighting a mysterious assassin, tracking him down. He's actually in danger. It's not, he's been getting, he got beaten in a fight, and they let him live because they want to torture him more, and all the while he's foggy, he has cancer, and he's trying to deal with that as well. It's really, and this is kind of one of the very first big serious moments for this book, where because when Mark Waid took it over, it was after, you know, Bendis did his long run with Daredevil where tons of bad shit happened to him. And then Brubaker did a long run where even more bad shit happened to Daredevil. And then finally, you know, they're like, we need to make this, give him a little bit of lightheartedness. And this book is kind of bringing it back to danger. But I don't know if we should, it's very clever. The art, you like the art?
I love it.
Okay. Yeah, Chris Samnee's, he's
It's hard for me to pick what my favorite drawn book is this time. This is a strong contender for it. This is gorgeous.
Yeah, he's really captured, he really captures well Daredevil's, how he sees the world. You see it again and again with the series, but every time it's still great, because his sense, his powers are so unique, and presenting it can be difficult sometimes, but it does a very good job. And the plot reveal near the end is really, really clever, really fun. Bringing back an old enemy that you think is out. No, I'm not going to spoil it.
Yeah.
But
I will say that...
Yeah, that's pretty clever.
I thought it was kind of... I don't know.
You didn't like it?
Nah.
Well, it's weird. I mean, they hinted at it last issue.
It was an interesting reveal, though. There's so many good things to say about this book. I'm not going to say anything bad about it, really.
No,
the little cute story at the end.
That is really
good. Story about kids with cancer.
Kids with cancer. I love their art.
It's pretty awesome.
The Jack Kirby-esque monster fight with the old Silver Age Fantastic Four and Avengers. Their little story. They fight the cancer monster, and then Iron Man actually shows up and.
This is what his costume looks now?
Yes, that's the new Iron Man costume.
It's cool looking, but...
We will start covering Iron Man when Greg Land is officially off the book for good.
I'd say that's a strong decision.
He's not on the current arc, but he's coming back. I don't like that. Kieran Gillen's writing it. I feel bad for not giving him my business, because I really like Kieran Gillen. But Greg Land, I'm very sorry. No porn star faces for me. And... So we're all go on Daredevil, of course. If you're listening to this and you regularly read comics, you're probably already buying Daredevil, but you should if you don't.
What's the neighborhood? What is it that Daredevil is
in? Hell's Kitchen.
I was going to say he's a New York superhero, isn't he?
Yeah, Hell's Kitchen, yeah.
So have they ever done a Spider-Man Daredevil story? Because it seems like...
Oh, yeah.
I was going to say, it seems like a natural thing to do.
Oh, there's plenty of... There's actually...
I was just wondering, like, if they would do it because, like, they're both... They're a little too similar, except that one is like...
Daredevil's more rough and tumble, I think.
Yeah, no, I get that. Spider-Man's more bright colors and happiness, exactly. But like, they... I don't know. You could easily do this, I don't know, similar... I don't
well,
know.
No, there's an issue in this series that Daredevil kind of goes back and forth with romance with Black Cat.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a really famous panel that's been floating around online for ever since it came out, where Spider-Man's like on the shadows, hanging onto the stuck under the you know side of a building, and they're kissing, you know, and he's like, "This is my super villain origin story."
I've probably seen it.
And it's pretty good. But yeah, they teamed up tons of times, even with the new Marvel now. There's an entire Spider-Man team-up book. It was... The Avenging Spider-Man is basically his team-ups with... But now that he's Doc Ock Spidey, I don't give
he's,
that...
He's dead.
I don't give that my business. I haven't bought any Spidey solo book. And I used to love Spider-Man.
Dude,
since Brand New Day.
Yeah.
I just can't. I'm sorry. It's not my Spider-Man.
You cut it off at Brand New Day.
I did.
Yeah, what the hell are they doing?
Marvel, generally, I'm a Marvel guy. For
I
the
think
most part.
That
I just can't.
Next year, Angela's going to be the new Spider-Man.
I can't.
She's still going to be called Spider-Man, too.
Oh, good.
Well, she's going to transition female to male.
Occupy inside Peter Parker's head? Or?
I've been sworn to secrecy.
Oh, you're in the know. Our bonus issue, bonus review for the week is Uncanny X-Men number 6. I read this regularly, and after I read this issue, I was like, we need to put this on the podcast because it's really, really good.
It's beautiful for sure.
Yeah, Frazier Irving did the art for this. He's doing the current arc. I love Frazier Irving stuff. in this particular arc is probably the best one because they go to hell and you
get everything too.
Yeah,
he's color, he's all the drawing. And you gotta admire that. You gotta be fast and hardworking to pull that off. How many pages are in this book, though?
Probably 24.
That's 18. It's a short book.
Oh, it's only 18?
It's 18. I'm going to say it seemed really short.
Okay.
But 18, and there's some splash pages in here. There's not a lot of story in this, in my opinion.
Well, it's not, you know, it's mostly...
Oh, wait, I guess there are... It's 18, but a lot of them are double.
The splash pages,
Yeah.
Okay.
Although it's you know, that's a misnomer.
It's not a splash page?
Well, yeah, splash page. What do you call it? It's supposed to be the Eisner, like, opening page, but people use it as any full page. Yeah.
But that's not really true.
It's not technically, but I think that
it's just become what people say it.
Yeah, it's one of those things that the word is changing. Language is alive.
Yeah, I know.
They are literally changing the definition of the word literally. Yeah,
but the story is very simple. This is mostly Ilyana, who's Colossus's sister, whose powers, demon powers, she gets pulled to limbo. I mean, hell, basically, and is doing battle with Dormammu, and the X Men get pulled along with her, and they're fighting monsters. And then this plot isn't very complicated. There is a little subplot about stuff happening back on Earth. With S.H.I.E.L.D. trying to track down the Renegade X-Men team. But the art is just beautiful.
Yeah,
it's so gorgeous. And I dropped the other X-Men, the all-new X-Men, because I'm more of a fan of this the Uncanny book. It's mostly a Ilyana story, you know, trying to deal with hell. And the Cuckoo sisters get a lot of screen, a lot of page time in this as well.
Yeah, there's a lot of people in this I don't know.
They're psychics. They're like little mini Emma Frosts, basically. So, and they kind of ramp up the rest of the team to get them. Well, most of the team is our new mutants, so we're half of them roughly. So that's why you don't want to lose them.
But you want to talk real briefly? You want to catch me up on the mutant revolution?
Oh,
it's pretty important to this story. Yeah, and I don't really know that much about it. You've been following. You're even wearing your...
I'm wearing my Cyclops' right shirt. Yeah, I thought it was appropriate.
Apt for today's discussion.
It's basically after Uncanny X-Men vs. Avengers, which was not terribly good crossover, but it did spur on Cyclops as kind of this mutant revolutionary leader. He's kind of a Che Guevara figure, where it's kind of emphasizing his place in pop culture. Where, like, you may be to some people, he's an evil guy or a good guy, but he's just famous. He's like a famous... He's not necessarily a valued either way, but he's a famous revolutionary. He's leading the upstart X-Men team, while Wolverine's leading they're like the counterculture. Cyclops is the counterculture X-Men team, while Wolverine's like the safe, you know, public team that has, like, he's... Because they, you know, Cyclops killed Professor X at the end of Avengers vs. X-Men, which they were at war, so I don't blame him. Professor X has been a pretty big dick to Cyclops his entire life, so I don't, again... But most, like, all these Cyclops and Emma Frost... They had the Phoenix powers for a while, and it's kind of made their current powers kind of wacky. Magneto as well. He didn't have the Phoenix Force, but it's kind of his presence. Magic, Ilyana, also had the Phoenix Force, and for some reason she's more powerful. And then the rest of these guys are either new recruits, new mutants that have popped up since the Phoenix Force is after the end of the crossover, or Angel is actually the mutant. He's the version of Angel from, you know, the first... five X-Men, because they time traveled forward. And that's... I know. All New X-Men is like the sister book to this, where it covers the five that came to present day. Beast goes back, takes them forward.
Mm-hmm.
And then the rest of these are new mutants that popped up. You got Tempest, who controls time. Fabio, who just shoots gold balls out of himself.
There they are.
And they call him gold balls. He's trying not to... And Triage, who heals. Then there, the Cuckoo sisters have also joined after last issue. There's a big reveal at the end, which is, I think, kind of funny.
Mm.
I think it's interesting to see how that works out. I'm gonna read this book regardless, but
I want to talk about it because
I'm
not going to though.
You know, okay.
No, it's a reveal. It's not good to do it.
No, it's not. But I love the art. I'd buy this. I couldn't care less what the plot is, and I'd still buy this book because the art is just beautiful. I love Irvin Fraser.
I should start following this artist.
He did he's done a lot of Batman recently too.
Yeah?
Yeah. Not consistently, but that's like the other big project he's been working on the past couple years.
Who is it that he's reminding me of?
I do not know. That's it for our weekly floppy.
That's some floppies.
That is. So up next, we are debuting a new segment. I know you guys are excited. Just the sound of that sound makes your heart pump a little harder.
Palpitate,
nice word. See, and he says he doesn't know how to talk.
I that's what I say.
But it's the next new segment is called Comics Are Metal. Cookie Cutter Vegetable. Okay. We are both big metal fans.
Metal heads, you may even say.
Basically this segment is Eric's gonna name off a comic book character or multiple ones.
Yeah, I've got several here.
He's got a list that I haven't seen yet.
He has not seen them.
And I am gonna name a metal band that I think is emblematic of that character. And I'm gonna talk it through a little bit because most of these bands are not well known.
No.
To the mainstream people who are not metal fans probably never heard of most of these bands.
The thing to understand about Robbie is he's kind of a nerd for everything.
I don't think that's hard to understand at all.
Well, no, anyway. I didn't say it was. It's just needs to be understood.
Yeah.
That when we, well, one of the first times we were hanging out, like, have you heard of this band? And then you, like, name 15 different bands, and I've not heard of any of them. And, I mean, I don't know. It's just kind of amazing how you collect this stuff. But
I don't really consider myself that. There's people who know a lot more bands than I do. No, it's
certainly true.
No, that's the basic gist of it. We're gonna talk it through. It's gonna be funny, maybe.
Well, if it's not ritualistic suicide for all of us.
Hurricurry.
Hana Kitty.
I'm culturally insensitive.
Just say midget instead.
Exactly.
Just say midget.
So
we're gonna midget ourselves.
Serve them up, Eric. You go ahead.
Okay.
We're gonna go through.
I figure we're gonna start with an obvious one.
Okay.
And that is the Unstoppable Juggernaut.
Oh my god.
Because if anyone was a metal band, it's Juggernaut.
Oh, because god. Juggernaut. Yeah. He is a metal band.
He's a fucking metal band. So if you can't do this one, this fails.
I'd have to go. I mean, he's an old character.
Yeah.
He's one of the oldest X-Men villains.
Yeah. God, isn't it? It was like one of the first couple of books, wasn't he?
I don't think he wasn't, but it was Silver Age. I know that. It was like
Silver Age? Oh, okay, then I'm wrong. I'm way wrong.
No, it's like in I forget his debut. It's just within the first 50 of X-Men, which
I was imagining.
In the 60s.
I had a flash of like Jack Kirby drawing.
Yeah, I'm sure he did.
Yeah?
Yeah, probably. Okay. But he's one of the old characters. He's he's still around, technically.
Yeah.
Even though he's not in the same form at all. He gets his powers from a gem. This jewel.
What metal band gets their powers from a gem?
But he's big and destroys things.
I bet Dimmu Borgir get their powers from a gem.
I'd have to go old school death metal. I think that it probably so like Obituary maybe or even Death. Like
Death.
Death is good. That's a very old school.
Death's not a bad call.
The old school.
Yeah.
Or I'm trying to think of other.
Morbid Angel.
That's not bad. Maybe. Yeah. I think Death's better, though.
Maybe so. So, that's your call?
I would say in that area. Okay. Death or Morbid Angel or even Obituary. Something, you know, old school.
I thought you were going to name bands that I don't know. I actually know these.
Well, I know you know those.
I'm a little less.
It depends on the character as well. Certain characters probably will go with bands you've never heard of. But those are... I mean, Juggernaut,
he fits in that old school death metal stuff.
Yeah, I think so.
Where it's just chugga chugga.
Yeah. Yeah, that's yes. There we go. There we go.
So we're in consensus there, I think.
Okay. I can accept that.
Okay, good. That's all I want. All
right. This one I'm trying to mess you up on this one. God. So okay, this is a
curveball.
This will take
a Kirby curveball.
I don't think it's
not a Kirby.
I have some Kirbys on here, but not these two.
Okay.
This is a two-parter.
Oh, okay.
This is a dose parter. This is Green Lantern.
Oh no.
We're talking compare two of them. Like, say, I put down John Stewart, but say Hal Jordan instead. Hal Jordan and Guy Gardner.
Okay. Hal Jordan and Guy Gardner.
Yeah.
Man. Hal Jordan is not a very metal guy, I'm sorry.
Do you want to do John Stewart instead?
I don't know. Hal Jordan's like, we can find a metal band for Hal Jordan.
Well, this is just to describe this. I mean, they're not all of these very...
I know, very metal.
Yeah.
I can do Guy Gardner a little bit easier.
Well, okay.
We can start with Guy Gardner. Because I have a very concrete depiction of him in my mind.
Mm-hmm.
I gotta think of him, he's like a crossover punk metal band.
Okay. I can get behind that.
Yeah, because he was like, especially when he's first debuted, very kind of rebellious, kind of that punky, anarchy, annoying character until Batman punched him in the face.
And that's how he grew up.
I don't think so. I think he was still an asshole.
He
has that kind of like crusty punk attitude. Yeah. But in a punk metal band, I think like Municipal Waste.
Municipal Waste. I can get behind that.
Or,
no, I think that's pretty perfect.
That's good, Municipal Waste.
Yeah, but who's similar enough to Municipal Waste that there's the Green Lantern connection?
That's a problem.
Yeah.
Maybe Hal Jordan's like Megadeth. Hal Jordan's like Megadeth. Where there's a thrash. The thrash connection is there.
Yeah.
But... they're
of all. I was gonna say one of the big four, maybe.
Yeah,
Megadeth is probably a good call. Is Hal Jordan as damaged as Dave Mustaine is?
No, he's not. But
does it matter?
No, I don't think it matters.
Okay.
We can't judge just by Dave Mustaine. But I think of all those bands, Megadeth has stayed the same the most.
Okay.
And they're just, I mean, Dave Mustaine's gone crazy, but other than that, the band hasn't changed.
Okay.
So I think it's Megadeth and then Municipal Waste, kind of. Where Municipal Waste may not be a better band, but they're interesting.
No, I get it. I think that works.
Okay.
I think that works.
Okay.
I'm sure it means nothing to...
That's fine.
This is apparently just to entertain ourselves.
That's fine with me. That's all. Who's next?
I'm kind of thinking about changing up from my notes here.
Okay, that's fine.
Because originally, we can
call an audible.
Originally, I was going to say Darkseid and Orion, and also Thanos. That's his name, right? Infinity Gauntlet.
Yes, Thanos. Yeah. But Thanos and Darkseid.
No, exactly.
Same character.
That's exactly why I threw him in there.
Okay.
But I'm thinking, what do you want to do? Darkseid and Orion, or Darkseid, Thanos, and Apocalypse?
I'd rather do the second.
You'd rather do with Apocalypse?
Yeah, with Apocalypse.
Okay, so that's your triplet there.
Okay. This
pressure's
is,
on.
This is heavy. This is heavy thinking right here.
Yeah.
Because Darkseid came first, and he's a Kirby creation. So he deserves a serious band, like a one that is important. Again, I want to go with an old school death metal band, but I don't think we need to do death metal necessarily. But I think maybe new wave of British heavy metal, or the first wave with Judas Priest or Iron Maiden.
Mm-hmm.
I think Iron Maiden. I think that's more.
You think it stands out as old enough?
We can even Motorhead. That'd be my other proto-metal, where it's so much has come from it.
Mm-hmm.
I think the
obvious one is maybe Black Sabbath.
No, that's... God, how could I not think about Black Sabbath?
Did I just score a point on Robbie?
You probably did. I don't know how I didn't think about it. Like, it's so obvious now.
Yeah.
That you say it. But, that's Black Sabbath.
Black Sabbath.
Dark Side is Black Sabbath.
Dark Side is Black Sabbath.
I mean, it's so obvious I didn't see it, but... That is.
Yeah.
And then Thanos is, I mean, he's a ripoff of Darkseid for the most part. I mean, he's kind of gone his own way.
Mm.
But initially, it very much was like, we need a giant cosmic character who's evil incarnate, basically. I don't want to call the band that I would call Thanos like a ripoff.
Mm-hmm.
But they'd have to be similar.
I mean, music is different.
Yeah,
you know, it's one thing to take a character and make the same character, but musicians are inspired by other musicians. It's just a movement. It's okay.
Yeah. Again, I would say Deep Purple.
Deep Purple,
maybe they're another one of those like precursors to metal.
Yeah,
like where they had heavy sound.
Yeah,
very kind of. Sonically similar to Black Sabbath, a little bit more popular. And again, they kind of. Have you listened to the new Black Sabbath album, by the way?
No, I've not.
I've only heard the single. It's okay. Not great. But, I just brought that up.
Okay.
It's hard for me to think of another band that would. For Thanos, maybe be.
I was thinking.
Maybe a new. Maybe we could do like a new. One of those stoner bands, stoner metal bands, more a modern, maybe like a Kyleza, or
You're still naming bands that I know.
You've got educated.
I guess so.
You've been educated.
I knew Kyleza before. You didn't tell me about Kyleza. I knew about them.
I know. That's what I'm saying. they're in the Atlanta, Georgia. Stoner metal scene, which, I mean, you knew about Mastodon, of course. And Kyleza is very similar to them, where they were. Kyleza or... I'll just go with Kyleza.
Yeah?
Yeah. They're, I mean...
How far back do they go?
Kyleza? They're not that old. They've had 3 or 4 albums now.
Okay. I kind of like Deep Purple better.
Okay. I'm seeing the same similar sound, but...
Yeah.
Later. Deep Purple might even predate Black Sabbath. I mean, or
does it?
I'm not sure. They're close. They're both in the mid to late '60s when they started.
Like, I don't know that we have a perfect fit for that. I love Black Sabbath for Dark Side. He's perfect
for Dark Side. They're perfect. But Deep Purple I think is not a bad one for Thanos.
It's not bad. It's not bad.
But for Apocalypse, I I'm more familiar with Apocalypse, so. Apocalypse he's also like an evil despot kind of character. He's a mutant though.
Yeah.
And he's kind of, well, has a little bit of flamboyance there.
Mm-hmm.
But it's purple. He's purple.
He's.
And then big lips.
And lips.
And he can shapeshift. He's the first mutant. He's old. He has celestial armor.
He's a fucking rad character.
He is.
I'm a fan.
But he's now a child.
Yes.
He's now Evan. Evan the.
Which I like that too. God, those are some good books.
Yeah. He's a child now, so I would say like
are you gonna do old Apocalypse and young Apocalypse?
No, I think I'm gonna try and do a newer metal band that is a throwback.
Okay.
To kind of older styles but I can change it up sometimes. Like Wolves in the Throne Room.
Wolves in the Throne Room.
Wolves in the Throne Room. They are a black metal band. Black metal's been around for a long time, but it's gone through the most changes probably next to death metal. There's since so many different kinds of experimentation. It's definitely gotten a lot of experimentation very much recently. But their songs kind of hit all kind of cylinders in black metal, but they're very much a throwback to older, like, you know, early Celtic Frost and old black metal stuff that's not even black metal necessarily, but kind of even proto black metal. But they're a new young band, but they're very, very metal. So, got any more for me? You want to call that a day?
I have one last one I want to throw out there.
Okay, go ahead. You're smiling. That's a good smile.
Dazzler.
Oh, Dazzler.
Yes. This is the one I was excited about.
Dazzler. I think she's a female character. She's firmly rooted. She's been around since the 80s. That's 30 years now. Mm. She's dynamic. She's obviously, she's gone through many different iterations, but she's
true.
She's out there. She's extroverted. Her powers are like show offy.
They're twinkly.
Twinkly.
Is she the exact same thing as Jubilee?
Not quite.
It's
different enough that you can make a distinction. Plus, Jubilee's Asian.
Yes, plus she's Asian.
That's all.
And she has that bolted on to
her. They didn't have any mall rat characters until her, so... I think Dazzler's like the test character for Jubilee. They waited 10 years and brought out Jubilee because Dazzler was... They needed a younger Dazzler, basically.
I always play Dazzler.
As Dazzler in the X-Men arcade game? I always did Wolverine, of course.
That's because you don't have the chutzpah to play with Dazzler.
Even though they all played exactly the same.
They all are exactly the same. There's zero difference.
But Dazzler, I would think a power metal band.
Power metal.
Like Sonata Arctica or Nevermore. Someone like that. A well-known but very kind of flamboyant, no growl, all clean singing, mm-hmm. high. And that Sonata Arctica has a female lead singer, so that
okay.
That might, I think that's my choice, Sonata Arctica for Dazzler. It has to be, I refuse to go to glam rock bands. I'm not doing Motley Crue or any of those, that ilk.
No, I mean, if there was...
That's not metal to me. They're rock bands. They're not metal enough.
I think it would be acceptable if you felt it was a better fit.
No, I refuse. If I'm the one decided...
It's good that you're principled.
Sonata Arctica is my choice.
Okay. That'll work.
Okay, so that is it for Comics on Metal for the week. Next is Classic Breakdown! I'm going to cut half that.
I hope so.
That was
Classic Breakdown.
That was Classic Breakdown.
That was Classic Breakdown.
Okay. This week we're discussing, on Eric's suggestion, Life and Times of Scrooge McDuck, Volume 1 through 12. We did not read any of the recently released, extra content. There's like half issue, in between mm-hmm. stuff that we didn't read any of that. We read the original. By Don Rosa.
Yeah.
A short summary. I mean, it's an all ages style adventure book. It kind of tells the story about Scrooge McDuck and how he made his billions.
Skyrillions. They're all actually made up how much money he actually has. I've read quite a few of these comics. There are a zillion of these, and it's kind of scary how much depth there is to it. There's almost like a whole... like Duck universe that's almost completely removed from Disney, and it seems like that Uncle Carl, I don't know if that was his intention.
Carl Barks, who is
Uncle Carl,
the creator, original creator of
Scrooge McDuck. Yeah, and it just, I don't know, it was a very bizarre concept that he was going to write adventure comics about Donald Duck's uncle from Scotland.
Yeah.
But they were very good, and Don Rosa is the spiritual successor to all that, and they're some of the best comics I've ever read. I'm a very big fan.
Yeah, they're very good. It travels from even when he was a child.
Yeah.
And then it goes through adventures, and I mean, it hits a lot of adventure. Things when you think about adventure movies, adventure stories, it hits a lot of those points. Mm-hmm. You get the West, you get Africa, you get the North. You get mining.
Yeah.
You get all kinds of stuff.
It's I don't know. It's an amazing and fantastic story about a character that many of us just know from the DuckTales cartoon.
That's where all my exposure to him is from, was DuckTales.
DuckTales is loosely based on a lot of the ideas in these stories, but there's a surprising amount of depth.
I was going to say, the thing I took away most of them is the amount, these books are not super long. A couple of them go to like 30 pages, but most of them are under 20. And still, the amount of storytelling there is on even in any one panel or one page is astounding. It's so much content in just one issue. Like, the amount of story he tells on a page,
it's very dense.
Very, very dense.
When I talked to him about it, I compared it to Eisner, which I think made him uncomfortable. He doesn't really see himself as, he takes a lot of pride that he wrote these stories, and he's always down on his comic art.
He's a pretty humble guy.
Yeah. But he does have a really amazing, storytelling ability.
Yeah, both his writing, the textual writing, plus his visual storytelling and his art.
They work well together. I would compare it to Eisner.
Yeah, I mean, it's a good comparison. Right? Yeah. I mean, it's...
Because Eisner he was not into things being cinematic. It just needed to be well-drawn, and it told the story as quickly and efficiently as possible. Eisner could tell what would take a comic artist like 22 pages. He could tell in two.
Yeah,
that's the kind of artist he was. And Don Rosa kind of falls into that school of thought in comic making. So there's so much going on here, so much depth, so much story told.
And I mean, the art itself is very good.
I really like
it. It's so detailed.
I really like so much there. Yeah, absolutely. I really enjoy Don Rosa's art, and he refuses to see himself as an artist. But I mean, it's not all like amazing fine art and I mean, it's cartoons. It's very good solid cartooning. So.
It's excellent.
Yeah.
I mean, some of the details and the backgrounds. There's what book is the one where he's in the bar the shady town. That's it right there.
This is where he wrecks the boat.
Which is awesome.
It's one of my favorite parts. That's really good. It's so good. He throws the piano and...
You see the Scrooge McDuck temper. Like, he becomes, superhuman.
Was this it?
That's it. Yeah. That's the page.
Yeah, that's really excellent.
Which volume is that?
I do not know. He's in the Yukon.
Okay.
It's when he's in the Yukon.
King of
the
Klondike, probably, then?
Yeah. So it's... I guess that... We've talked about, it's a lot of his backstory, but it shows a lot of his motivations.
Yeah.
And there's
character progression here.
Yeah.
And you see it, one where he goes to Africa.
Yeah.
And steals land, basically. Mm-hmm. It's horrifying because you grow so attached to this character. You like him. Because in the early issues, he works...
Yeah.
Really hard.
Yeah.
You see him want to make money.
It's setback after setback. And
like, for 20 years, he struggles after struggle after struggle, and you get attached to him, and you admire his tenacity. And then as soon as, in the later, maybe last two or three issues, he's acquired most of his wealth.
Mm.
And most of his means, and you start seeing him turn into caricature, the stereotype of Scrooge, where he's cheap and he doesn't give a crap about anyone else and don't get in the way of his money, and it's horrifying.
Yeah,
it turned me a little bit. I was like, this is it. Kind of made me feel bad. I felt awful that what he did, but it also it's a turning point for the character as well.
Here's I think is what is the most interesting thing, and I don't know how many of these afterwards you had.
I have one.
Okay. Did you read?
I didn't read all of them. I read, I kind of grazed.
Well, he talks about it, but one of the things that's so amazing about how well crafted the story is really a lot of it is just connecting the dots that, like, if you read Carl Barks comics, that there would just be like a panel or a couple of panels where Scrooge would tell a story about being a young man. And he's like, well, I used to do this, you know, I made my money on the Klondike, or I was a cowboy, or I did this thing or this thing. And Don Rosa pieced it together and made this story out of that. Like, and it fits in, like, he filled in the gaps that Carl Barks left. And I think that is one of the most impressive things about it, that it works so well.
Yeah, it's quite wonderful. When Eric initially suggested this, I said, well, there's a little bit of a uproar online about Don Rosa recently, because he had posted there was an epilogue he had written for his career about why he was quitting comics, retiring, and he wanted it that Disney was publishing a new, you know, Don with his name on it. It was, you know, a collection of all the stuff he had done, and he wanted this included, and they were all for it until the fact came out that a lot of it was heavily critical of Disney, publishers in general, and kind of the issues of creators' rights. You can find it. I'm going to post the link.
Yeah.
To it, he wrote
in
it
in the notes for this episode.
In the notes for this episode, it's a good read. I'd suggest reading. I mean, it's a little long. I would say it's worth reading the whole thing. It's interesting, kind of his perception on his entire career, and it kind of lays out one by one why he's quitting, and the most of the issues are either connected to the ones he lists as one and two. Two is his eyesight, which is he's had minor eye issues his entire life. And now, recently, it's gotten so bad that he almost went blind, and he still cannot see well, even with glasses and surgery and all kinds of stuff. He can't. I mean, a lot of the stuff he's finished, he had to get the page an inch away from his face, and draw, and it's kind of heartbreaking.
Yeah.
Like, considering like that, he would, and he still did it. Like, if I had to do that, I don't know if I would. It's pretty rough. It speaks to how much, and he also goes over how much he loves this the character of Scrooge McDuck.
He absolutely does,
and the fact that he's inherited the legacy.
Yeah,
and you can tell that he thinks that he's lucky just for getting the chance to do it. Aside from his sight problems, the number one reason is the fact that he's not alone. There's a lot of many famous creators who have felt shafted by the work for, you know, the pay system among most publishers, where you don't, there it's your their characters, you just happen to be writing them at the time, and you get paid. You got paid already. You got paid for that issue. You don't get any residuals. You don't get anything like that. He understands it, and I mean, that's very difficult sometimes, because these guys sign contracts. I mean, they agree to it. I mean, a lot of time they probably either were just happy to get a paycheck. I mean, it's not you're an artist, either writer or actual working out on the art in a comic book. You're not otherwise outside of that. You're not gonna get a necessarily a firmly paying job in those fields. So when you finally get one, I'm sure you're pretty eager to agree to whatever they put in front of you. Don, his main contention is the fact that they were using his name. It's not just Life and Times of Scrooge McDuck by Don Rosa. It's Don Rosa's Life and Times of Scrooge McDuck. And his name is a big selling point. He talks a lot about it, especially in Europe.
Yeah, he's considerably more famous outside of the United States.
Yeah.
Really, no one quite knows who he is. He goes to cons. I don't know if he's going to continue going to cons, which...
He says he loves it, but, I mean, yeah. He may not. Depends.
It's some cons, you know, people engage him, and he seems to be having a good time. Recently, he just sort of sits there and looks surly.
Well, that's a lot of...
Yeah, no, that's true.
That's a lot of artists.
That's true.
I haven't
spoken with him in many years. Okay. I think I'll have to get my copy.
You should get
autographed.
Because that's
Do you want to mention that? Because it seems like a natural segue that we should talk about.
It's out of print.
We normally we'll share links on how you can buy. The collection, but the Life and Times of Scrooge McDuck, like you just said,
it's out of print. You can find it on Amazon or eBay for a couple hundred dollars.
Yeah, my copy is probably worth $150.
Yeah,
I don't know. I'm gonna get that puppy signed, but
it's kind of ridiculous amount of money for any comic book. And the fact that this is so good and it's out of print, it's kind of sad. So
there are ways
we won't go into detail to acquire.
Maybe you should use the internet somehow.
If you search on Google, maybe it'll lead you how to acquire this book in other ways.
Yes.
We'll leave it at that. But his plight, I mean, I sympathize. It's kind of the story of a lot of guys. Alan Moore is probably the most famous.
Yeah.
With him in DC, where they have all of the Watchmen and V for Vendetta, and they've taken the rights and put it to movies and all kinds of stuff, and about Reneged Promises, then Kirby, and Ditko as well. Those are the other two big names, I would say, for creators' rights issues. Kirby and Ditko. I mean, Ditko's finally gotten co-creative credit for Spider-Man. Stan Lee finally gave him that. I mean, he did the character design, for God's sake. It's hard to argue against. And Kirby, how he draws is helped define comic books for years and years and years. And it's sad that...
I'm not a huge fan of Kirby, but it is undeniable the influence that man has had. I mean... And you just think of the sheer volume of the stuff he did.
Yeah, he drew so much stuff.
He was a machine. I mean, it's unreal.
And creators' rights, it's an issue that doesn't... It's not going away.
No.
And it's more pronounced now. And creators now, I think, are a little bit more savvy about that stuff. And they're I follow multiple guys on Twitter, and they're like... You have to just keep it. You're renting these guys. You are not buying them.
Yeah.
You can put your mark on them, and you're getting paid for what you write and or draw. You are not nothing. It's their character. They can do what they want with it after you're gone, and there's nothing you can do about it.
I mean, that's to that corporation's benefit. It's a well established property.
Yeah.
And that's what they're going to do. But when you think about the creators that have done well, when I think about Neil Gaiman is probably a much better businessman.
Yeah.
Than Don Rosa is. Don Rosa, doesn't he talk about like having like his family has wealth or something?
Yeah,
he came from.
He said his father owned a construction company. He said he's a workaholic.
Yeah.
So he works all the time anyway. I don't think. He says he doesn't have a job now, and he still works on his land. He has like a huge plot of land out in the middle of nowhere.
He has the Rosa Ranch.
And but his family had. He says he has a you read about his collection. He has like 40,000 issues of comic books.
That doesn't surprise me.
And various other periodicals and stuff like that. Mad Magazine is an entire collection of Mad Magazine. So he's not bad off. So we should feel bad.
But I mean, I was just gonna say that like he doesn't really need to come into it with that business mindset where Neil Gaiman was like really working to prove himself, and I don't know. It was a discussion I got into a friend of mine with. We were talking about Drew Struzan. Illustrator that did the newer Star Wars posters.
Okay.
He's been an illustrator for 30, 40 years now. Very, very prolific, very talented. But what stood out, my friend Adam, also an illustrator, told a story about how there's a documentary on Drew Struzan, and in a Q&A session, someone asked Drew, why don't you do the poster for this movie? And Drew said, because they can't afford me. It's not in their budget. And, you know, Adam and I discussed about how, you know, that's a dimension that you need as a professional artist.
It's true.
And I think it goes for writers, any kind of creator, that, you know, you have to be a business person. It's not all just about...
It's part of the job.
Yeah, exactly.
You have to... I read articles recently about... There's a lot of... you want to be seen as well as be paid. And, you know, you have to kind of quell that impulse. Certainly, there's been, people writing articles. Get paid. Get paid for your art.
Yes.
Do not give it away just because you want it out there.
I think it's why... This is a tangent, but I think it's a relevant one, the writer's strike one. It was so important. And I don't remember every dimension of that, but apparently it was like other media, it was transmitted. They wanted royalties based on that
internet
too.
Internet views as well, and they're like, it was ridiculous.
Yeah. It almost seems excessive, but when you think from their perspective, how much stuff is going to shift to that.
Yeah, exactly. That's the thing, it's all going towards things being online. And
absolutely.
Then if they gave him an inch now, it's going to turn into much, much more down the road.
But it seems like comics, like they kind of need that moment.
Yeah.
For creators' rights and all that. From this discussion, that's sort of...
We could probably go on this for a while.
Yeah.
I would say that if there is a creator that you like... that you enjoy, writer or artist, if you like their work at the big publishers, Marvel or DC, go find out their creator-owned stuff. If they publish with Dark Horse or Image or even self-publish, go find it and go buy it. Support them. That I try and do that. And usually their creator-owned stuff is good or better than the stuff you'll find in Marvel or DC.
Yep.
I mean, I love my superhero comics, don't get me wrong. But I branch out, look into their other stuff, buy their art, buy their writing, buy their other books, support them, it helps support them financially. You like their stuff, show that you like it. Also, for retired creators, Heroes Initiative is a fairly well-known charity nowadays. You can donate to that, their proceeds go to, retired creators who don't have retirement funds. Because they drew and wrote comics for 30 years without any kind of severance package. So that would be my suggestion. Don Rosa, kind of tailing it back to Scrooge McDuck. He's in that boat. He's very super talented, obviously. I mean, this book is really good.
Yeah.
It's really sad that it's out of print, that you can't buy it.
Mm-hmm.
And but again, maybe go online. You can find multiple ways to acquire it. But I think that's it for Classic Breakdown for the week. No random character generator this week. I'm very sorry, folks, but we're very tight on time. I will go over our first Twitter question from a listener.
Beautiful.
It's very exciting. But our question is from Twitter handle Aetar, AETAR, via Raylan, WRAILYN, who are both my friends. But his question is, I just got Marvel Unlimited. Where's a good place to start? For those unfamiliar, I know Eric was until I told him about it.
Yeah, Eric doesn't know anything.
Eric doesn't. He's an idiot.
He fucking sucks. That guy's stupid.
He's so stupid. Marvel Unlimited is basically an online subscription service to old Marvel comics. They scan and upload them, and it spans quite an impressive amount of comic books. Spanning from the very beginning to like maybe 6 months ago. So they don't have new stuff, but they're just now uploading stuff that's, 6 months or 8 months old, whatever it is. But the stuff available on it is, there's a lot of it. That's a lot of classic stuff that is really, really good. I'm a subscriber, so I can't. It's only $60 for a year.
Is there an app for it yet?
There's an app for iPad.
There's an app
for iPad and for Android, which before they had that, it was kind of because you can only read it on a computer.
I mean, this stuff is only. I mean, to read it on a tablet
is much better.
I mean, come on.
Yeah.
I want to look at
computer screens.
Yeah, Jesus.
But just by like browsing briefly for like 15 minutes, Grant Morrison's new X-Men run, that's all there, which starts like in 140s or 150s. If you look, you can find it. You can also search by creator. So if you like a writer or an artist, you can find all the stuff that's on there for him. So Grant Morrison's new X-Men run, really good. Brubaker's gigantic run on Captain America that's lasted for 7 years features Return of Bucky. The Death of Captain America, all that stuff is there. Really good secret agent noir kind of stuff. All the classic Daredevil runs, Frank Miller's, Bendis's, Brubaker's recent one, all of Peter David's X-Factor, which has spanned hundreds of issues now. It's almost ending. You can catch up on that. Good character work in that. All of Dan Abnett, Andy Lanning's cosmic stuff. Nova, the Guardians of the Galaxy, which the movie's about to come out. You want to catch up on, you know, Rocket Raccoon and its zany cosmic adventure fun. It's all there. Annihilation event, which is really good. Matt Fraction's stuff that he's been working on in Marvel. So Immortal Iron Fist, which is really kind of kung fu inspired, karate movies inspired stuff. His run on X-Men, all that stuff. Walt Simonson's Thor run. I don't think it's all there, but a lot of it is there. Hundreds of issues long. I think maybe over half is on it. So you can read all that. I mean, if you can think of an old Marvel comic, it's like the old Claremont X-Men stuff. It's most of it's there. Like, there's a surprising lot of... I mean, Rick Remender, you like any person who's ever written for Marvel, you can go find it and read it. Read all of it. Catch up. I mean, one trade can cost... I mean, Grant Morrison's new X-Men omnibus costs $125 retail. You can pay $60 and read it all on here without having to go through illegal means. Make you feel a little bit better about yourself, maybe. But, I mean, Eric, you have any Marvel books you can think of off the top of your head that I didn't list? Because, I mean, it's really just any kind of... I try to hit iconic things, but it's really any kind of old... Just if you want to Google, I mean, I listed some, but you want to you Google Marvel.
Nothing is jumping out, honestly.
But if you Google classic Marvel comics and just look at, I mean, there's so many lists of people put together top 10 lists of stuff all the time. So anything that's on there, I mean, you can find it for the most part. And they're constantly adding stuff every week. It's new books. So old Spider-Man stuff, it's all there. It's all good.
You can catch up on the Clone Saga.
Unfortunately, you can if you want to know what everyone, so all the online people are so psycho about Ben Reilly for. Because my Spider-Man, he wears a hoodie over his costume.
That's the way to do it.
That makes perfect sense.
Yeah. Yeah, they didn't really go into it too much, but it's because his nipples stuck out of his suit. He was embarrassed.
Is that why?
Yeah.
But that's it, sadly.
Yeah, Robbie's giving me the evil eye because we're not doing random character generator this time.
It's okay. It'll be back next week or the week after.
And we don't have quite so much other business to discuss.
We're running quite long this week, so we didn't want to make it too long. But next week, well, the return!
The triumphant return. The
triumphant return of a random character generator. But this is it for Handsome Boys Comics Hour this week. Again, you can find us at handsomeboyscomicshour.com. You can email us at handsomeboyscomics@gmail.com. You can find me on Twitter at Mixmaster Serial. My Tumblr is mixmasterserial.tumblr.com. I also run a wrestling Tumblr, hittingthemark.tumblr.com. We have a Facebook page for Handsome Boys Comics. It's Handsome Boys Comics Hour at Facebook. You can also find us on iTunes. Please go to our iTunes page and review us.
Yep.
You give us reviews, more people see it. Very simple. Please, even if it's a sentence, we appreciate it. Eric, where can they find you?
Oh, I'm all up and down these here internets. The best way is just to Google Eric Z. Goodnight. You can see my portfolio, freewillunlimited.com. My Twitter is Mr. Bad Example. That's with an MR, Bad Example. And you can also see a lot of my stuff at ericzgoodnight.com.
So that's it for the week. We'll see you again next week. Have a good day. Thumbs up.
Rock and roll.